This is Developer's Journey. My name is Tim Bourguignon. Thanks for joining. And good evening, everyone. Tonight, I have a very special guest. She's called Manuela Ring. Hi, Manuela.
Hi, Tim.
Hi. It's been a long time preparing this interview. We have had to postpone a few times, but I'm really happy that we are finally here and recording this.
Yeah, completely my fault. I'm so sorry, but we scheduled for today, and I'm so lucky that it worked out.
Yeah, I'm as well. We've worked a couple times last year together. Actually, we met in June, I think, last year, through a common friend, and we recorded a Channel 9 video last year, a streaming video that was our first contact. And since then, we've been chit-chatting and discussing a lot of things, and I thought you would be a great guest on the podcast.
Yay!
Do you want to say a bit more about yourself, where you come from, what you do, because you have a pretty amazing position, and we'll just kickstart from there.
Okay, so I'm Manu. I'm basically from Austria. I'm a kind of expat here in Munich in Germany, but actually coming from Austria to Munich, it's not that much of a cultural shock. So just the beer gets better.
You said it.
I said it. Oh my god. So sorry, Austrian guys. You have to catch up. Good. Okay. So much to the beer. I'm a techie girl. I don't know, since I can think, I guess. My first contact with computers I had at about the age of 10. This was end of 80s around. So C64, for example, was the thing back then. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It just started the magic, and it didn't wear off until now.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And when did you start getting serious about it?
Getting serious. So the couple of years before I graduated from what's high school in Austria, I already focused on computer science. We had how should I explain this? Some special courses which you could book. Mm-hmm. At school. Mm-hmm. And we had programming there with Pascal, for example, in Delphi. I don't know if you remember those old times. Yeah. Blue background, yellow font. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those were my beginnings. So this was when I was age 14, 15. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as I said, the magic didn't wear off. So after school, I decided it has to be something with computers, what I want to study. And then I started to study technical computer science. I don't think that I would do this again. But having the basics and knowing computer science from the ground upwards didn't hurt, actually. Yeah, and after studying a couple of years more than I had to, I entered the business out there. And I had some stages, from little company to big company to middle company to giant company where I'm currently. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Okay. You've been doing Pascal and Delphi, but you've been doing all the languages, right?
Oh God, a lot. Yeah. Also, I wouldn't say that I'm capable of really writing and using them productive, but let me think. We started with Java at university. For sure, we had to do some C and C++ because of the old professors, which thought Java was just a fling. Mm-hmm. Yeah. good guess from them. JavaScript was not that much forced, actually. We did some XML, because when you learn Java and you have web services, you have to do SOAP, right? And mm-hmm. That leads you to XML.
Of course.
Okay, what else was there? There was
I just know you from the Objective-C and Swift scene, and I was surprised to see your handle being Java chick. What? So you had a past which was not Swift and Objective-C.
Yeah, it's
shocking.
It's a dark one, and it's a quite enterprisey one actually. Because right after university, I started working at Keba. Most people don't know this company, but actually they do, because they are the ones who assemble the Packstation, for example, and a lot of self-service machines in banks, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they're, I did Java basically, and wrote a UI-based testing framework. So sounds pretty cool afterwards. Back then it wasn't that cool.
It really is.
This is actually how I started into the Java world. And this went on to the next company I entered, because in a big company right after university, it was kind of, it feels like being stuck somewhere to be of not any influence within this company. So just get an order, process this order, get the next one. So yeah, it wasn't colorful. I always say I want to have my work colorful, and this wasn't colorful at all. This was gray and black and dark.
That sounds horrible. Okay.
I left there, and I went over to a company with just 10 employees. But the super interesting thing was they had super, super giant customers, like a lot of ministerien, so a lot of government in Austria. For example, the Department of Defense, the First Alpine, so the biggest steel, one of the biggest steel production plants.
Mm-hmm.
It was the Patentamt, European Patents Agency. Yeah. And I did visualizations in Java, in Swing.
Okay.
Yeah, for a couple of years. And this was exactly the time when iOS and the whole mobile world started to get somewhere. So you saw that it wasn't just a trend, so that the real business evolved out of this. And I still have the feeling, but back then I really realized it, that you can put the software you wrote before and used with keyboards and mouse, you really can touch it with the touch device. And having a smartphone, which is kind of attached to your body, kind of, and write software for your own super personal device, and then be able to really get a grip on it, to really touch it, this is what this fascinated me from the first moment on. And this was the turning point where I thought, okay, leave this enterprise stuff behind. The customers are super interesting, but we only wrote software for a bunch of academic knowledge groups who use this. And with the mobile world, you had the world open, because as soon as you have an app in the store, which is visible, then you have hundreds, thousands, or millions of users. And this was so, so exciting. And this is why I took the step and moved to Munich and became an iOS developer.
Mm-hmm. So that was the job before your last, right? Or before the current one. So you did iOS development only.
I did iOS development because I was super interested and learned a lot. I went over to architecturing the whole ecosystem around it. So the app is mostly just a little part of a big software business. And I did a lot of architecture work there. And I started to be responsible for the iOS team at the company I worked for. So this is how I got in touch with the management position. So because it was head of iOS suddenly, which was exciting and super great, but made me so anxious at the very same time. But I think this is completely normal when you get thrown into cold water again, because it was completely unknown territory. Mm-hmm. Suddenly you are the boss of someone, of 15 people. And yeah, this made myself very humble, I guess.
Yeah, till the end. Really scary.
Mm-hmm.
Is it something you enjoyed doing?
Yeah, I was biased, I guess, because on the one hand, it was super exciting to be responsible for the forthcoming of such a lot of great minds and to see them evolve as you give them possibilities to do so. And on the other hand, I always had the feeling I'm failing, I'm constantly failing, I'm doing everything wrong. Yeah, so there was the two hearts. So the one constantly worrying, the other one constantly cheering. So it was balanced, I guess. But being not completely overwhelmed by yourself is a pretty good thing, though, I guess, because it keeps you on the ground and makes you think every time, rethink your decisions and reflect on what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. So you're not completely out of your comfort zone, but far enough to learn and stay on your toes.
Yeah.
That's good. That's a perfect point to be.
It was, yeah. But later on, the work I had to do shifted a bit too much. That's why I gave this position up, because I'm, as I told you right in the beginning, I love technology. I love coding. I love building things. I love understanding complex things. For example, when you see something and you have the feeling, oh my God, I will never step through this. I will never cope with this. And after doing a lot of little steps, suddenly you achieved this goal. And this is what I really love to do in tech. Mm-hmm. And this management position was shifting into a direction which was not right for me at this moment, because I would have to leave a lot of time for tech behind and to really focus on the management part. So it was no 50-50 anymore. It was more of a 70-30, more to a 80-20.
Mm-hmm.
Not being able to do tech anymore, it really started to hurt to see that your own team is doing the epic shit stuff and you are feeling I'm really, yeah. So it was not right that, but it felt like just filling up Excel sheets.
Mm-hmm.
While the other people are doing the great stuff. And that was the point where I saw, okay, it's not right anymore. It was right. And it was super exciting to be able to walk this path with all those great, great guys and girls in the team. But when it really got unbalanced, I thought, okay, this is the point where you have to do something else, because otherwise you're stuck here and you're regretting this in a year or two or five or in 10 years. And you're looking back and then you're one of those people who say, oh yeah, I was used to coding too. And yeah,
mm-hmm.
I thought it's not time for me to say this. Yeah.
No, I totally relate to that. I had exactly the same experience.
Okay.
Before switching to my current company, I was working for Siemens, and mm-hmm. I felt myself completely drifting into management as well.
After
2 years, I said, "Well, no, I'm not ready for that," and I switched to a very technical company, and did 2 years of pure technical stuff, mm-hmm. drifting in management again. And now I embraced it, and it's doing really great. But at that time, I wasn't ready either.
Mm-hmm.
But let's focus on you. Then you made a pretty interesting move after this.
Yeah, the move actually wasn't that interesting, because I still think it was just coincidence.
Okay.
I wasn't looking for something like that, what I'm doing right now. And for the listeners, should we keep the secret?
okay.
So when I really felt that the position I'm in doesn't feed my expectations anymore, so it doesn't doesn't fit to my passion, which is currently driving me. I decided to quit and joined another company where my husband and I had the super, super great opportunity to start a new tech area, a whole new division. And after starting, by the beginning of last year, we got kicked out 3 weeks later because management decisions and cleanup in hierarchy and so on and so on. So our new division, which started with 4 people, was canceled out of the organization. So having decided that my current job isn't what I want to do, starting with another challenge and then get cut off with this challenge was quite hard, actually, really hard. Mm-hmm. And when I'm looking back, I think it was the best thing which could have happened to me, because at this point, I really had the opportunity to think about what I really want to do. So this was not just, okay, I want to be more tech. I can build up a new division for mobile development there. So now I really was there with empty hands and had to make up my mind, in which direction should I run? Mm-hmm. And this was, yeah?
No, go ahead.
And this was quite freeing the mind and, making myself kind of nervous, because I've never been to this position, but it helped a lot to really make up my mind in which direction I will go in the next few years.
Mm-hmm. Is this a process that you realized while you were living it, or is it not something in retrospect that you can relate to right now?
This is definitely something in retrospect, because when I was in this situation, I was just, damn, this happened to you. You wanted to do something and someone else decided that you're not allowed to do this anymore. And now you're there with empty hands. So sure, I never make, I never was anxious that I don't find another job. It was just, what do you do now? Mm-hmm. So are you going back to coding? Are you looking for management? No, because this is what you really realize that you don't want to do right now. And where do you want to go? And because the possibilities out there are so broad, it was a really tough time for me to figure this out, where I want to go.
But you did find out.
I did find out, but as I said before, it was a complete coincidence. Because when I applied to my current position, the title is quite esoteric, I think. I couldn't really get a grip on the position itself by just reading what you have to do. It just sounded cool, because you can do tech, you can do community, you can do prototyping, you can do partner work with super early stage development tools. It sounded like cutting edge with a safety net and meet a lot of people on your way. And that sounded very, very exciting. And that's why I applied to this job. And I thought, hey, this sounds good. And let's see if the expectations get fulfilled by the first interview. And it worked out pretty well.
It did. Yeah. Now you have all the listeners on the chairs waiting to know what the heck you're doing. Knowing your background in iOS and mobile and all this stuff, you must be working for Apple, right?
By now, everybody has Googled me and found me on different platforms that I'm a technical evangelist at Microsoft.
What?
Yeah.
No, wait a second. It just doesn't match up. You're doing iOS. You're still doing iOS, right?
I'm still doing iOS at Microsoft. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How does this work out? It works out pretty well, because a lot of tech companies out there, a lot of the big and kind of the old and ancient ones, realized that just selling their own products in their own ecosystem doesn't work out anymore. And Microsoft saw that just selling licenses of different products, version over version, years after years, doesn't work out anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the whole company started opening doors. And yeah, that's what a lot of people, or a really big crowd of people, is feeling, that there is a lot of change going on with Microsoft. What we are doing with products, with open source communities, with community work for itself, and how the strategic position of the products is changing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what does a technical evangelist actually do?
A technical evangelist, I used to say that I'm taking the developers by the hand and walking the first cumbersome, hurtful, and maybe we are losing a bit of blood, the first steps with them, and guide them the best I can to make their way into those new technologies and handle the new technologies so smooth as it can be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I kickstart them in a very nice way, I hope.
Okay. And how does this work on a day-to-day basis? Are you going from company to company, speaking with developers, or how should I picture this?
So, this is a little part of it. So I'm working with partners too on little workshops with just a bunch of attendees. But most of the time, I'm doing the broad evangelism, we are calling this. So I'm going to conferences, I'm going to meetups, I'm going to user group meetings, and so on, and mm-hmm. talk there about the stuff which I'm really enthusiastic about. And this is always based on mobile development, because this is for my heart is really beating for. And then I'm looking for the connection points to the Microsoft technologies, because every mobile app, for example, or most of the mobile apps, need a backend somewhere. And mm-hmm. Microsoft has Azure with such a broad offering of different services. Mm-hmm. Or your iOS app wants to do some fancy things, or some very useful things for accessibility, for example. There you have the cognitive services APIs. You can detect faces. You can make speech to text, text to speech. You can search in a very meaningful way. You can try to understand the emotions which are in a text, for example. Mm-hmm. So there is more and more and more, but my day-to-day basis work is really to have a look at the mobile ecosystem and what from the Microsoft world fits to this ecosystem. And when it fits, I do talks about it, write demo codes, and yeah. That's basically it. Blog posts and interviews with people like you, Tim.
Oh, shocking. okay. Did you do that kind of public speaking before coming to Microsoft?
No. I always wanted to. I was talking at, I think, one meetup and one conference before entering Microsoft. Mm-hmm. So really out there. But for once, I didn't have the time, because my job was really, really time consuming. But this sounds like like everybody says, hey, I have no time, I can't do this. But I actually didn't see this back then, that this is so important to share your knowledge, to share your pain, actually, what you've learned from failing, what you've learned from succeeding, with people out there, and to get better through sharing. Because a lot of devs think, so what I experienced, that when they go out there and say, hey, look there, you can do this in a really cool way, or I ran against the wall there, and this is how I recovered and succeeded anyway. So to tell their stories, they think they are making others better than they are, and that the others had a competitive advantage then. It sounds weird, but I think people are really anxious to share their own experiences, because they are really afraid that someone else can use this knowledge in a better way, or like themselves.
Mm-hmm. It could be.
Or they are shy.
Yeah, they're afraid to show their weaknesses and so say, well, this is what I tried and it didn't work in front of 10, 20, 50 people, maybe more. How was this first step? So you said you were at a conference, or you spoke at a conference or meetup before, but this first step on the stage, how was that?
Yeah, I was sweaty, my heart dropped, the typical symptoms.
But you survived. You survived.
I survived, and this is what I really can tell everybody. Everybody who really tells me, hey, I want to start speaking to, and I said, hey, why don't you? I have this and this and this meetup. I can put you on the agenda. Let's do it. So it's really just doing it. And you will fail. You will be shitty on stage.
Oh yes.
Don't care about this, because you have to start somewhere, and you're getting better. And there are those natural talents out there. They put them in a group, and they will entertain the whole room. It's okay, but you don't have to be this natural talent. You just have to have a lot of enthusiasm about something, and this is what really keeps the people listening to you.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
I have experience with speaking about your own experience. I've realized that this is what people most get their most the biggest high on.
Yeah.
I've been doing a lot of talks, sometimes speaking a lot about experience, and sometimes going really theoretical, but some even deeper, really deep, but theoretical on some subjects. And all the topics where I speak from experience are just going bananas. I don't know. It's really something.
I can totally agree, because think about yourself. When you are sitting in the crowd, at a conference, at a meetup, or wherever, and you hear somebody speaking of something which happened to him or her, this is always personal, because failing or succeeding is attached to emotions in both ways. And when those people are talking about those experiences, the crowd can feel this, because this is completely authentic. This is not something... a summary about some technology I read about, and that's why I'm here and want to bring this topic closer to your attention. It's really talking about what happened to somebody, and this is thrilling, I think.
It is. Since the timing is running, I really want to ask you this question. How is it being a female speaker in the tech industry?
Oh, it's like being the super colorful unicorn in a good and bad way, all at the same time, because you get a lot of attention, which is positive and negative at the same time. I was at a conference 2 weeks ago, and I swear, I was the only woman there, except from the service personnel. Oh. And this was very strange, because you mostly have some female listeners and attendees, or somebody from organization, I don't know. But I was the only one. And this is not so cool. So those situations really let me realize that we have a problem here. But this problem is totally solvable. So this is nothing I really worry about, because there are a lot of people out there, a lot of women out there who really want to do this first step. But as we said before, they're just anxious to do this, because, oh, I will talk to just men. Yeah, hey, don't worry. Men don't show emotions when you talk to them, but hey, they listen. They really listen. and you get the cool feedback afterwards. It's thrilling. It keeps you going, and it keeps being a challenge, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
But it's fun. It's really fun. If you love tech, you're meeting so many like-minded people, and if they're male or female doesn't matter, because when you meet something, you share share enthusiasm on a topic, then doesn't matter at all. Yes, you have the awkward situations where things are happening which won't happen to a male colleague, but they're getting rarer and rarer. So we're on a good way, I guess.
I sure hope so. But then I hope you realize you're some kind of role model now, right?
Yeah, a lot of people are telling me this, but it doesn't feel like this.
You have a very cool title.
Hey! I'm a technical evangelist. Female.
Yeah.
Maybe I should add this to my job description. Female technical evangelist. God.
No, that you shouldn't do. You shouldn't do, but...
diversity alarm.
No, but that's a big problem. We are running a couple conferences of the company you work for, and when I look, I'm mostly part of the committees, the program committees, and when I look at the submissions, I'm always abashed at the very little amount of submissions we get from speaker Renan, how do you call her? Well, female speakers. And even if we wanted to have more diversity, then we have to go and get female speakers and reach them personally, which is well, always a hard work and hard to manage. It's doable, but it's still hard. So.
Mm. Yeah, because there are not so many of us. When I think back to university, in my year when I graduated, there were one other woman and I don't know, 50 men. So it doesn't get better over the years, right? Because a lot of women are dropping out of jobs or pausing it because of family, and returning to something which is already hard is even harder. So I can understand every woman who says, I want to focus on family, or I want to work in another branch of business, because this is just hard, and life is hard enough. Why should I make my world even harder by running into stupid and awkward and nerfing situations?
But also situations that make your attendees and yourself grow in an exponential manner.
Yeah, absolutely.
During those talks, it's just amazing how much you learn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and getting the feedback from the listeners, and it just has to be one guy or one girl who just says, "Wow, this was great. This inspired me." That then you won. You instantly won the whole challenge.
Yes,
because. Because you stood there and inspired somebody else by what you are doing, by just being yourself. And this is just great. And that's why we're doing this, right, Tim?
Yes, that's what I'm why I'm doing it. So
yeah,
I can totally relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
The worst talks I did where I felt I'd completely bombed and it was not interesting at all. And you get just one comment from a person with some sparkle in their eyes and say, well, this was great. And
yeah,
everything is forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you still know you messed up, but at least you were helpful to somebody, and that's all we are there for.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't have said it better.
Oh, thank you very much. unfortunately, our time is running.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something you wanted to talk about? Did we miss a subject? Did we miss something? Miss a term somewhere?
Well, basically not. All I really want to say is that we need more speakers out there who really love what they are doing. And people out there, when you love something, get out there. Just do it. Just go in front of really like-minded people. They don't bite. Nobody's hating anybody. And if they do, the community will deal with them. We will kick them.
Definitely.
But just do it. Be brave, and you will see that it really pays off. You will grow. You will grow more than the listeners, and it helps everybody.
I'm into that.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't have said it better.
Oh, thank you. So much love.
Yeah, so much love tonight. That's really great. Oh, I'm sorry, I don't have my unicorn. Oh no, I see it. It's back there.
Oh, I just have a Samarin ape, but I don't know if this is counting.
Oh, yeah, definitely counting. Unicorns are better, but apes are definitely good as well. So we reached the point where I would like to offer you the opportunity to plug anything. Do you have some conferences coming or something like that?
Actually, I have something. We will launch a workshop format, I would say, but it's actually a challenge. It's called Mission to Mars. Mm-hmm. And this is a one-day workshop, which will take place in a couple of different cities, two times over the next 3 months. So we will have two workshops in Munich, two in Cologne, two in Berlin, and two in Hamburg, and one in Karlsruhe. So wherever the people are, there will be a workshop near them. And what we will do there is get hands on a basic level on IoT, on serverless computing, and on cognitive services. So you will leave the room after one day having touched all of this cool tech topics, mm-hmm. and can just get started with it afterwards.
Okay.
So it's Mission to Mars, and I can send you the link that you can put it somewhere afterwards.
In the show notes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah, it would be super, super great if we have a lot of attendees who want to get first touch on those technologies. So because the experienced one will maybe just bore themselves to death because we will start at a very basic level. But this is a really good opportunity to have a guided entrance into those topics.
Mm-hmm. Also some kind of free workshops? Or is it
It's completely free. We have we have snacks there, we have coffee, we have drinks, we have a good entertainment, I hope so.
Mm-hmm.
It will be a lot of fun and really hands-on tech. It's not just somebody stands there and just talks to people. It's always a little intro and then hands-on workshop. So the people have to code by themselves. And we are there as coaches to help where help is needed.
Sounds cool. Sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Can you send me the cities as well, or the link? Maybe the cities are on the link, so I can
mm-hmm. put
all that in the show notes.
That's okay. It. Yeah.
Anything else?
Actually, no. That's everything, well, I guess.
Well, that's already a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Then I think we have finally have our episode. That was great. Thank you very much, Manny.
Thank you, Tim. It was really, really lovely. Thanks.
Yeah, and we can do that anytime to speak more about doing iOS at Microsoft. Sorry,
I'd really love to. And I think we can fill a whole episode just with the ordering process at Microsoft when you need Apple products.
Okay.
Yeah.
Get legals on that, and then we can talk.
Okay. Good.
It was great talking to you, Manny.
Thank you, Tim. See you too.